program must be in the town, we could just interview the mentor, a piece of book, and the interviewer was talking about the previous owners of the house and their situation, the husband and wife were not talking to each other for a number of years, or his communication, and you just amplified a little bit on that.
Yes, our farm was owned by a couple, you will not believe this, who were named June Corbin, this was the farmer, the he farmer, and May Corbin was his wife, June and May Corbin. They had owned it for a long time. They were Rappahannock County people who had been there for generations. Late in life, they had a falling out. It was said, this was when Mr. Corbin, June Corbin, was in his 60s, and the rumor around the county was that it was over another woman, which tells you something about Rappahannock County men, I suppose, I hope. In any event, she remained up on top of the hill, living in the old cottage. He moved to a shack down by the pig pen, down at the bottom of the hill. They communicated by yelling at each other when they had to. This is entirely typical of country people. The Rappahannock County country people are just wonderful. They don't work except when they feel like working. They're very independent. Whatever holidays the Republic may observe, Rappahannock County has one that is universally observed. They close the schools, everything, courthouse. This is the opening of deer season, because this is the most important thing in their lives, for many of them up there. Say, I remember once when we were new to Rappahannock County, we were doing some construction, had a lot of building tools down at the bottom, and some, you know, garden tools, and I was about to put them away for the night, lest they be stolen. And Charlie Settle looked at me in disbelief. He said that in the whole history of Rappahannock County, it never had been heard of for any person to steal anything that you could work with. I'm going to take only one or two, and then you can go have a little of the Virginia Fifth.
I hate to break the mood, but I want to ask a more pragmatic, worldly question. What direction do you see conservatives moving politically? Do you think they're growing?
The question is, what direction do I see conservatives moving politically? Oh, sir, sideways, I suppose, or in circles. It's not an easier and especially fortuitous question for me to try to grapple with. I have read, as all of you have read, these various polls that purport to show that there is a growing conservative tide in the United States, that conservatism as a political philosophy has never been more popular than it is supposed to be right now. Simultaneously, the Republican Party has very seldom been weaker. It was weaker once in 1938, but at least in terms of the state legislatures, the governorships, the House and the Senate, the Republican Party is very poor shape. You have just enough Republican governors to get up three tables of bridge. So, not very many. We ask ourselves constantly, why is the Republican Party not the chosen vehicle for this purported conservative tide? We begin to wonder, does the conservative tide exist? I'm hopeful that it's there, but I sometimes wonder if the proper questions have been asked on these various polls. They have a question on them typically about capital punishment. If you are in favor of capital punishment, you are put down as a putative conservative. I'm not certain that that is necessarily true, that you can extrapolate from a position on capital punishment into a position on deregulation of natural gas or the airlines or the trucking industry. I don't know that you can. So I'm a little skeptical of these surveys that show all this conservative spirit. I don't know where conservatives can go. Among many of my conservative brothers, there appears to be a sort of a political death wish. This happens whenever a proposal is advanced, as Mr. Reagan advanced it, with such unfortunate results on July the 26th of 1976, to broaden the base of the Republican Party. You see, Mr. Reagan is exactly right in that. His choice of the senator from Pennsylvania, I think, was unfortunate, regrettable in many ways. But Reagan was exactly right. If the Republican Party, and this is my contention sentence, you see, If the Republican Party wants to win, it must broaden its base. Now, that's a great big if clause. I'm not at all certain that the Republican Party as a party, meaning the leadership, meaning the influential people in it, really wants to win. It's astounding. Well, you talk with some of these people, and it comes down to this sort of nitty-gritty, and I make the tentative, you know, kind of general suggestion that what the Republican Party needs is more voters. And I met with this incredulous response. You know, voters, who needs them? Huh? Well, it's a fine ideological position to take, but you don't win more than 12 governorships that way, and some of the governorships are not all that to our liking. You know, we would like to get rid of a few of these liberal Republican governors and get down to two tables of bridge, or one, or none, but they would all be pure in defeat. Well, I don't know where conservatives go in a situation of this sort. The obvious vehicle is the Republican Party, provided conservatives can accommodate their prejudices to the political necessity to take a few people under the tent who do not necessarily oppose the fluoridation of public water supply, or whatever. Conservatives are, I speak with great affection, and sometimes exasperation, as one does within the family. Conservatives, I think, have no place to go, really, except in the Republican Party. They must be ready to accommodate themselves to people who are not quite so conservative as they. My brother.
Some of us have felt that a natural target of opportunity for the Republican Party to expand its constituency is the Southern Democrats who have followed Wallace or leaders of his type.
I think there is an opportunity there. We've been trying to exploit it here in Virginia, as you know, for a long, long time, with rather more success than we've had in the rest of the South. At least we've had a couple of Republican governors in Virginia. But in our General Assembly, which is now meeting down in Richmond, we have fewer Republicans now than we had 10 years ago. It has not been a very successful effort. There's so much independence, still so much unwillingness. Part of it is the residuum of Watergate, to identify with the Republican Party as such. We have a number of independents in our Virginia House of Delegates who, for all practical purposes, are Republicans. But they're not titularly, identifiably Republicans. But yes, Dan, that is, of course, a source for the Republican Party, provided we can walk that delicate line in the South and avoid racism. There is still a lot of residual segregation of sentiment among the Wallace-type Democrats, the old bird Democrats. It would be, I think, fatal to the prospects of the Republican Party in the country as a whole if, in an effort to attract the Wallace, Byrd, old line Democrats, we were to become identified with the redneck segregationist position. This ought to be repudiated, and it could be done. I think, Stan, the greater opportunity, perhaps, in the country as a whole lies in labor unions. We could, I think, in the Republican Party, lure many hundreds of thousands of labor union members who are not now really voting as Democrats. They're middle-income people, raising families, sending the kids to college. There is much in the Republican platform to appeal to them if the right pitch is made. I think that probably is the greatest source. Then I think we have a great chance among the young people. Within the 18 to 25 age bracket, more than half of those who register to vote now register as independents. But that should tell us something about the course of the two-party system 10, 15 years down the road. Among those young people, there is a natural instinct toward rebellion. Down with everything that's up. This is the way you think when you're 19 years old. The Democrats are now in power. We ought to capitalize upon this latent rebellion sentiment of youth and lure them over to the Republican Party so that they can then, you know, down with everything that's up, oppose the reigning Democrats. There are all kinds of opportunities here, I think, if they're properly exploited. I think a gentleman behind you? No? Yes. I will quit.
I have the impression that maybe you could represent something like less than 20% of the
world. No.
You enjoy probably well out of proportion to that power that you have concentrated in the Democratic Party. Do you really think you can get much mileage out of going after them?
I think that the figures are deceptive in terms of political influence. Yes, it is entirely true that if you take the entire labor force, including the agricultural labor force, the women in the labor force, the teenagers in the labor force, the people who are doing day work as maids, housekeepers, so on, if you take the entire labor force subject to Social Security deductions, yes, 20% of that roughly is in organized labor. But within that 20%, I think there is a significant minority that is there kind of under compulsion that is part of an activist body. And despite its relatively small numbers in terms of this large amorphous mass, could be politically influential. Because these are, I think, probably more likely to be voters, registered voters, than the country woman who, for example, does our laundry on Wednesdays. She is a part of the labor force statistically. She's absolutely apolitical. Whereas the fellow in Culpeper who is unionized, he's a very political animal. We could get him effectively. I don't think you could go after Hilda Alther in 50 years and persuade Mrs. Alther to come in and vote Republican. This is the way with organized groups generally, I think. All right, any other light question? And then I'll stop yelling. All right, all the way in back. Yes? No, Shana Alexander is not as bad as she appears to be. She's only almost as bad as she appears to be. Now, that is a question I'm not certain. Is she uglier than Nicholas von Hoffman, was he? No, Shana Alexander is a very lovely and talented and often brilliant, but misguided woman. And I enjoy debating with her very much. I've forgotten what we're off on this Sunday night, even though I just taped it. Oh, I know, it's a marriage law in California that she's very much against. I never heard of it, but I'm perfectly willing to be for it. You know, it's hard to go wrong sometimes in that direction. And on that cheerful thought, I leave you and thank you very much.
That concludes it for this evening. They're rolling in the bar now, so let's drink up.
Get your boots, Howard. I'm worried more than you are.